This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
He tapped on the camera first. Little taps. The way a man checks to see if something is loose. It didn't come off. So he reached over to the potted plant sitting on her front porch, pulled the leaves off of it, and used them to cover the lens. Then he went inside. Masked, armed, gloved, a backpack on his shoulders, 2 o'clock in the morning, on an 84-year-old woman's front step, calmly doing a little gardening. He wasn't rushed. He had time. And he knew he had time. He was right about that, because the two agencies that were supposed to find her have spent every day since blaming each other in public. The FBI director went on a podcast and accused the sheriff of locking him out. The sheriff, in the middle of the search, answered a reporter asking about his own record by telling him to enjoy his hit piece. Hit piece, simply describing the employment history and lies of Nanos. Nancy Guthrie was 84 years old. She had a pacemaker. She needed medical attention every day. Pima County Sheriff Chris Nano said publicly that she could not walk 50 yards by herself. At 2:28 on the morning of February 1st, the app connected to her pacemaker stopped transmitting. That's the edge of the map. Everything past 2:28 is a question nobody has answered. We welcome your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. Her blood was on that front step, confirmed as hers. Her phone was still inside the house. Her essential belongings were still inside the house. The FBI released 4 black and white images from her doorbell camera on February 10th. They described the man on her porch as roughly 5'9" to 5'10", medium build. He carried a distinctive gun holster and a 25-liter Ozark Trail backpack sold at Walmart. He may have been wearing a ring. That's the description. That's what they have. The search that followed pulled in the FBI, Customs and Border Protection, Arizona State Investigators, search and rescue teams, dogs, drones, and aircraft. Tens of thousands of tips came in. The Guthrie family offered $1 million of their own money, and the total reward combined passed $1.2 million. There is no suspect. There is no arrest. There is no Nancy. The man on that porch was the most disciplined person involved in the case, and he still is. There are 3 things here that nobody in Tucson wants to talk about. A note that arrived on the 6th of February, a glove that went for a trip, and a sentence one of these men said on live television that he can't take back. Cases like this almost never die because the person who did was brilliant. They die because the people hunting him got distracted hunting each other. It happens 4 ways. It happens the same 4 ways every time. There is the clock, and the one only hours that really belong to you are the first 48 on that clock. Then there's the ego, where somebody decides the case belongs to them. And being right quietly gets replaced by being seen to be right. There's a silo where evidence goes to the wrong lab, the wrong desk, the wrong database, and waits. And then there's the story, because when the people holding the facts go quiet, the vacuum fills with grifters. All 4 are on the record here. On the 1st of July, the FBI's Phoenix office put out a public statement on the Guthrie investigation. In it, the Bureau said local authorities remain the lead. 45 minutes later, the Pima County Sheriff's Department put out a statement of its own. It directed all questions about the ransom notes to the FBI. Same night, under an hour apart, the federal agency points at the locals and the locals point at the feds. News Nation has reported that both agencies have at times sent questions to the other and denied being the lead. Retired FBI agent Steve Moore's read is that both may be positioning to avoid getting stuck with the blame. That's 2 institutions playing hot potato with a missing 84-year-old woman. Catch! The day before those statements, Reuters reported that an FBI official said none of the ransom notes were believed to be genuine. A second law enforcement source confirmed it. And 24 hours later, FBI Phoenix said publicly that while some notes were extortion attempts, others may still be legitimate and are being investigated as such. The Bureau contradicted the Bureau inside of a day. Asked about it at a Justice Department briefing when they were, FBI Director Kash Patel declined to comment. Steve Moore spent 25 years inside the FBI. His assessment was that there's a significant disagreement within the investigation, right down to whether certain pieces of evidence are real. Attorney Mark Garagos went further and said he believes the story was planted by somebody inside the Bureau. And May Patel went on a podcast and criticized Nanos for sending DNA evidence to a private lab in Florida rather than the FBI lab at Quantico. He made sure the evidence, or the audience rather, knew he had a fixed-wing aircraft on the ground, fueled and ready to fly that evidence out overnight. Nanos answered that the decisions were made on scene based on operational needs and that the Florida lab and Quantico had worked in partnership from the start. Two men, one podium fight. Nancy Guthrie is still missing. But you know about the plane. Patel also took credit for the doorbell footage. He said the reason the image of the masked man exists at all is that the FBI worked with Google to recover the data. And then he added that they could have gotten it days earlier and maybe gotten more of it if they had been let in sooner. The single biggest break in this case, and it's a grievance point against the other, the glove is where this stops being a messaging problem and starts being an evidence problem. A glove was recovered roughly 2 miles from her house. Investigators believe it might match the ones worn by the man on her porch. That made it potentially the most valuable object recovered in this entire case. It went to Florida. Then it came back to Arizona to be retested. And only then was it entered into CODIS, the National DNA Database. No hit, no match against any offender in the system, and no match to the DNA found inside her home. In the end, the glove was traced to a restaurant worker employed across the street from where it was found. The Pima County Sheriff's Department publicly confirmed that that person has nothing to do with the case. Meanwhile, the unknown DNA recovered from inside Nancy's house came back as a partial profile, not enough to run against CODIS at all. Nanos told NBC News that untangling a mixed sample at the Florida lab could take weeks, months, or up to a year. Up to a year for an 84-year-old woman who was bleeding on her own front step. The fallback runs into its own wall. Ancestry, 23andMe, MyHeritage, all bar law enforcement from searching their databases. The pool investigators can actually work with is actually a fraction of the size. Patel's other claim on that same podcast was that the FBI was kept out of this investigation for 4 days. He talked about how the first 48 hours are the most critical. The implication was not subtle. The sheriff shut us out, and it cost us. Nanos fired back the same day. He said he responded to the scene the night it happened. He said the FBI task force member was notified and present at the scene. He said the Bureau was notified promptly by his department and by the Guthrie family. Coordination, he said, began without a delay. Two men, two stories, that would be the end of it, except for what is already on the record from February. On February 3rd, 2 days after Nancy Guthrie was reported missing, an FBI special agent stood at a press conference in Tucson next to Sheriff Nanos. And that same day, Kash Patel went on Fox News and said about the same case that the Bureau was on the ground there with them. On the ground there with them. That's the sentence you can't take back. The claim that the FBI was locked out for 4 days is contradicted by the man who made it on camera in his own voice in February. So what? If you're listening to this or watching this going, well, this seems to be a lot of contradictory information, that's the point. That is the point. That is why there is no Nancy Guthrie being found yet. Because it's contradiction after contradiction. The acting attorney general then went on television and denied there was friction at all, while acknowledging he had seen the reports of it. Three officials, same side, same 4 days, three different versions of reality. Somebody is not telling the truth, and it's not the 84-year-old woman who is still missing. The man running the search has his own credibility problem. The Arizona Republic reported that Sheriff Nano's official department resume misstated when he left the El Paso Police Department. It's good to know who you're working with, isn't it? Look at the resume. Records show he resigned in lieu of termination in 1982 after a string of disciplinary actions. In a deposition, he testified he had never been suspended, though. The records indicated otherwise. His department called it two clerical errors, administrative in nature. Oh, really? His own deputies' union voted no confidence in him. The Pima County Board of Supervisors moved to compel a sworn report from him under a statute that could result in his removal from office. A recall effort was launched. And when a reporter emailed him asking about the resume the sheriff of Pima County had, the man leading the search for Nancy Guthrie wrote back one line, "Good luck with your hit piece." You get pushback when people don't want to be accountable. The first note came in on February 2nd, one day after she was reported missing. It went through tip lines to two local news stations and to TMZ, addressed to Savannah Guthrie. CBS News reported that it demanded $4 million in Bitcoin and that the price would climb by $2 million more if the first deadline passed. Investigators took it seriously for a specific reason. Whoever wrote it knew where her Apple Watch was, the one with the white band lying on the floor beside her bed. They knew the floodlight on her back porch was also burned out. Those are things, you know, apparently only if you're inside that house, or a good guess, or search the internet. The family worked with the FBI to create a response. They sent it, and nobody wrote back. Then on February 6th, a second note came in. The FBI determined it came from the same IP as the first. The note said Nancy Guthrie was dead. There was no ransom demand attached, no price, no deadline, no instructions, nothing to sell, apparently. Same source, which means the two notes are a package. Either both came from the people who took her, or neither did. There is no version of this where one is real and the other is not. It doesn't mean they lead back to the person who actually took her, though. We just know they probably came from the same source. And the Bureau has, at different moments, pointed in both directions. Reuters reported that the FBI tested the first note by depositing a small amount of cryptocurrency into the account that the note specified. The money was never touched. Nobody came for it. Her three children went in front of a camera. They held hands. They said they had received the message and understood it. They asked for their mother to be returned. They said they would pay. They were asking for a safe return of a woman that a note in a law enforcement file had already called dead. That note was not made public until June 22nd. There's a legitimate reason to hold a note like that back. You keep details private so that if people responsible make contact again, you can authenticate them against something only they would know. That's a real tactic, and pretending otherwise would be dishonest. But there's a difference between protecting an investigation and protecting yourself. Shelley McCollum, a working crime scene investigator, said on national television of that family that nobody has told them the straight-up truth. And into that silence came exactly what always comes. A man in California pled guilty to sending the family a fake ransom demand. Somebody began running a QR code scam using a missing woman's face, and the sheriff's department had to publicly announce it would never ask anyone for money. A YouTuber was arrested live streaming on her front lawn. The internet turned on her own children until Nanos had to stand up and call that speculation cruel. That's not a coincidence. That's a consequence. So look at what this case actually had. Savannah Guthrie co-hosts the highest-rated morning show in America. Her family put up $1 million of their own money. The FBI director posted the surveillance images to his own social media account. The White House posted about her. The reward passed $1.2 million. Tens of thousands of tips came in. That's the ceiling. There is no higher gear. There is nothing above it. And what it brought was two agencies pointing at each other and a glove that flew to Florida and came back. He brought a partial profile nobody can run and a note that sat in a file for 4.5 months. It brought a sheriff answering questions about his own resume and a director talking about his jet. The pattern is not theoretical. In Suffolk County, New York, the chief of police moved to cut the FBI out of the Gilgo Beach investigation. He signaled a directive requiring his own officers to notify a supervisor if an outside agency contacted them. Former FBI agent who later ran that department said his decision to push the bureau out likely hurt the effort to catch that killer. That chief went to federal prison, not for anything to do with the Gilgo Beach case. He went away for 46 months for beating a handcuffed man and orchestrating a cover-up. He was gone. A real task force with the FBI was finally built, and that is when they arrested Rex Heuermann. There's no conspiracy in Tucson. Nobody's hiding Nancy Guthrie. What happened here is more ordinary than a conspiracy, and it's worse. A federal director who wanted to win, a sheriff who wanted the turf, a field office that does not appear to agree with its own headquarters, evidence that took a flight it never should have taken, and a family standing in a doorway waiting for one adult in the room to walk up and tell them the truth. Incompetence does not need a motive. That is what makes it so hard to fight. There's nobody to indict for it. There's no perp walk at the end of it. There's just a woman who never came home. Savannah Guthrie stood on national television and begged strangers to come forward. She said her family was in agony. That's the word she used. Nancy Guthrie was 84 years old. She had a pacemaker. She needed her medication. Her family dropped her off at her own front door at night at around 9:45. And she went inside her own house and she never saw the morning. She was bleeding when she left it. Every day these two agencies spend deciding who gets to stand at the microphone is another day. The man on that porch sleeps through the night. The only person in this entire story who has shown any discipline at all is the one who stood on her front step and picked the leaves. Nancy Guthrie is not a jurisdictional dispute. She's not a press release. She's not a line item in somebody's resume fight. She's an 84-year-old woman who walked into her own house and never walked out of it. And every institution that was supposed to bring her home has been too busy fighting over the credit to do it. She is still missing. That's the only fact that matters in this case. Your thoughts on the dysfunction of this case? Or is it not dysfunction? Is this all being overplayed? Is everything, are we focusing too much on the dysfunction? And not enough on the suspect. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. When there's not a lot of information, you try to fill in the blanks. But I think observationally, the dysfunction here is likely part of the reason we don't have any answers as well. If you have any information, call 1-800-CALL-FBI. 1-800-CALL-FBI. Look forward to continuing our conversation in the comments section. Links are in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.